I'm sure we've all been in a situation where a group of regulars from work are upset with your significant other, so they decide to kidnap you. Wait, you haven't? Well, my guest this week has.
This is the Greatest Story Ever podcast.
There comes a time when all the cosmic tumblers have clicked into place and the universe opens itself up for a few seconds to show you what's possible.
With Keith Conrad.
You know, everything is not an anecdote. You have to discriminate. Here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
One person I might have to track down for a future episode is Kristen Williams from Pennsylvania. Kristen lost her pet cat Snickerdoodle about 8 years ago. She said she never really gave up on finding the critter, but wasn't actively looking for her either. But she did, however, surf the website of her local cat cafe. Lo and behold, there was a cat named Maria who looked exactly like Snickerdoodle and even shared her hobby of sitting in the sink. She reached out to the cat cafe, found that it actually was Snickerdoodle, and adopted her right away. She has a good story, but my guest this week may have one of the best stories I've had so far in the Greatest Story Ever podcast. Sherry Callahan, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Keith, for having me. This is fabulous.
And, you know, I talk to a lot of people, especially since I've been doing this podcast. You know, like, I'll just ask people, hey, what's the craziest thing that ever happened to you? And most of the time people are like, oh, shucks, nothing crazy has ever happened to me. But I feel like, you know, your story just kind of jumps out.
Well, thank you. And I have been listening to your podcast and you have had something incredibly crazy stories. I have to say, I have listened to every single one of your podcasts. Of course, it started with Keith and Misty Love in the Time of COVID. and I enjoyed watching your wedding. I was actually supposed to be up in Chicago for your wedding because I invited myself, because your bride, actually, fun fact, being a Callahan previously, and I'm a Callahan, on the Twitter, Misty and I have decided we are long-lost sisters.
I think that sounds about right. Yeah.
So, so when people are talking about crazy stories, I'll set it. So I had a Harley and my daughter wasn't born yet. And then by the time she was two, I was a single mom. Mm-hmm. And I would just take jobs, you know, whatever. So at the time, and this is in Arizona, the Hell's Angels had not infiltrated Arizona. However, there was this outlaw biker, and I'm going to say gang. I know you're supposed to say club, but no, they were a gang.
Well, you know, at that point, you could probably still say gang.
I think I can, and I know I can. So, taking any job I could get, at one point, they would party, have meetings, whatever, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And they discovered that as a Christian and as a girl that went to church on Sunday mornings, I was pretty much the only sober person they knew. So they, I was starting to date one of the men that belonged to the chapter. Mm-hmm. And so I would bartend, and then about 3 a.m. on Sunday morning, I'd tell everybody, I'm going to church now. Everybody would know. So they all knew where I stood. And they were, I have to say, very nice guys for being outlaw bikers. Very pleasant. I never felt any fear or frustration. None of them ever treated me disrespectfully. Mm-hmm. And it was great. So
maybe that's why you could call them a group instead of a gang.
Well, I couldn't kill. So I was dating this gentleman, and he had dated me a long time. I had a 2-year-old, and he decided that he wanted to be a dad and a father, and he wanted to marry me. So I never said anything, but he thought it would be a good idea to quit the club. Mm-hmm. And so he did. He just folded up his jacket and kind of like submitted his resignation like anybody would. And this did not go over so very well. However, I was pretty oblivious to everything, juggling motherhood and jobs and everything. So the story begins where I am at home one day, and my significant other has disappeared off the map. And one of the young ladies that procured things for these gentlemen had called me and said, "Hey, Sherry, we should get together for lunch."
Okay.
Okay. Sure. You know, that's what people do. and she shows up and I get in her car and we're in Tucson, Arizona, which the desert around Tucson just goes. And I, and one of your previous interviewees had mentioned how out in the desert things happen, like monsoon stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, we're driving through Tucson and I realize that we are not headed like to a restaurant or a McDonald's or a Burger King. And she's driving, but I start sensing that she's nervous. And so we're driving and then we're headed out of Tucson, out into desert. And we're definitely not having lunch at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like, my spidey sense starts tingling. And I looked over and I said, "What the hell's going on?" And she got very, very quiet. And then she burst into tears. And I'm like, "Oh, okay. What's going on?" I told her, I said, "You have to tell me what's going on." And she says, "Oh, I'm so sorry, Sherry." "What?" "Well, they want to talk to you." And by they, she meant their president, who was not exaggerating. He was the largest Mexican I've ever known in my entire life. He was 6'3", probably 320 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a very intimidating man. However, at the clubhouse, he's always been very polite to me. So I said to her, I said, "Okay." So we drive like 45 minutes, a long drive. And we end up at this trailer with nothing. You can't see anything for miles around.
Yeah, a trailer in the desert, you're just not going to feel good about that.
That's your sign, right? That's your sign. So at this point, I'm still not super freaked because I know all these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And there's these bikes, and I walk into the trailer, and all the brothers are in the living room, and they're all quiet. They're not joking. They're not smoking recreational drugs. They're not doing anything I would normally expect them to be doing. And I walk in and you hear a pin drop and I'm going, "Oh crap. Really?" And then this ginormous, we'll call him Gus, even though he's passed away now, Gus comes out and he says, "I need to talk to you." At this point, I'm realizing, first of all, nobody knows where I'm at. Mm-hmm. Nobody. And this is in the days before cell phones. And he takes me back to the back of the trailer and he puts me in this little teeny tiny bathroom and shuts the door. Now, this bathroom is tiny and he's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm 5'2", weighed probably 98 pounds soaking wet. And so I'm all cool because I'm so, you know, I'm cool. I'm stupid. What's going on, Gus? And he picks me up and he sets me on the bathroom counter and he says, "I need to know where Jared is." And I'm like, I don't know. And he starts intimidating me. And by intimidating, Keith, I mean really freak. He gets a knife out. He starts flipping it in the air.
Well, and this is, you know, before probably cell phones. So it's not like you could say,
"No,
yeah, sure. I'll call him right now."
Yes, right. Legitimately, though, I had no idea where he was. And so being a Christian and being not a liar, I'm kind of starting to get a little irritated because mm-hmm. I don't know where he's at. And Gus starts like in my face threatening me. If you don't tell me where he's at, you're not leaving this trailer. And when he says not leaving this trailer, I start really realizing my life is actually in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And so I start getting truly scared. However, you've known me in the past. I'm kind of a loudmouth, and I don't take intimidation very well. We worked in radio, you know, I put up with it. And so I'm just like adamant. I don't know where he is. Let me out of this bathroom. And Gus says, not happening. And he walks out and he leaves, and he locks the door. I am locked in this bathroom in the middle of nowhere in a trailer. And there's nobody in the house except male bikers. There's mm-hmm. no girls. So I started praying. And I'm telling you, Keith, it was the strangest thing, because he comes back in and I realize that if I'm not looking at Satan, I am looking at one of his minions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm truly terrified. I'm truly, truly terrified. And I also know I can't tell him what he wants to know. So I look over his shoulder, and I'm not joking. I'm not kidding. I could see two angels. I could see two angels over his shoulders. And all of a sudden I was like, you know what? If he kills me, I'll be at peace.
Mm-hmm.
But I also realized this is bullshit. Can I say bullshit? This is
sure.
crap.
It's the internet. You can say anything.
Okay. So I'm mad. Now I'm mad. And I saw these two angels, and it just gave me all this strength. And I stood up, looked straight up at this huge Mexican, and I said, you know, if you're going to kill me, just get it over with, because I don't know what you're talking about. I have no idea. And by the way, I don't even know where we are. So if you let me go, I can't even report you to the cops, because I don't even know where we are. And he stepped back. It was the most amazing thing, because he went from total intimidation to like, what? What? And I said, do what you want. He stood there a minute, and then he just opens the bathroom door and says, get the hell out of here.
Wow.
Okay, so, but then I walk out to the living room where there's eight or 10 brothers, and I know them all, but you could see on their faces, they had expected to hear a gunshot. And when I come walking out, they're flabbergasted. They're like, why is she walking out? And I stood there for a minute, because I didn't, I had no car. I had no way of leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And Gus comes out and he goes, well, she doesn't know anything. Somebody give her a ride home. So I'm still cool, Keith, until one of the guys has an old pickup truck and we get in it. And I'm about halfway there. I'm halfway home, and I looked at him and I go, I need the nearest liquor store right now. And so he pulls in, and I got a bottle of Jack Daniels, and being the good girl that I am, I did not start drinking in the car. But I get home, dude, I did shot after. I start crying. I'm like, oh my gosh, I just got abducted. And at that time they were incorporating into the Hells Angels.
Mm-hmm.
I just got abducted basically by the Hells Angels, and I'm not dead.
Well, at that point you feel like you can do pretty much anything.
I'm thinking. So I got drunk, and my daughter was at her grandparents, and the next morning I try to be cool, go to my parents, get the child. Well, that was almost the end of the story. Then, oh, like 2 weeks later, my boyfriend hadn't showed up. So this guy comes back to my house. He's now in my house. And he does this intimidation thing again. And it was kind of funny because he's sitting on my couch. He's flipping his knife and his two arms, guys, because in Arizona, we have open carry. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a gun. These guys use their guns. I happen to know this. People have disappeared from the circle since I've been affiliated with them. And he's flipping his knife. Well, karma's a bitch. And he flips his knife in there and it falls down on his leg and stabs him in the leg. So I'm like, very calmly, I go over and he pulls the knife out because he's bad. I mean, he's a badass. He's, mm-hmm. he's a monster. He pulls the knife out and I, real smart aleck, I go, well, now that you stabbed yourself and I still don't know anything, could you get the hell out of my house, please?
I figured you were gonna say you looked past him and you could see the angels in the background laughing.
No, the angels did not come to my house that day. However, the president of this chapter stabbed himself. So maybe that was God checking the, I don't know. But they left, and so then about 48 hours later, my boyfriend shows up and he's beaten to a pulp. They had gotten a lead pipe and it was just like Keith. It was just like in the movie. They had taken him out and they'd beaten him black and blue, senseless, unconscious. And 2 days later, one of the brothers shows up with my boyfriend in his arms, unconscious. He says, nobody knows where he's at. I was supposed to kill him, but I just felt sorry for the little guy. So here, he's yours. Do it. So I spent the next 48 hours nursing him. And then we left Tucson. we packed up the car and got the hell out there. So
that seems like it would be a good time to leave. Yeah.
Yes. And so that's actually how I got to the great state of Alabama. And so.
Wow. That's.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. I think that's definitely the craziest story I've had so far. Yeah.
Well, it didn't end. They tracked us down to Alabama. At that point, he was my husband. We'd gotten married on the road because I'm Christian. Want, you know, got to be married. Mm-hmm. And so we'd gotten married. Well, they had found. I mean, these guys, don't ever underestimate the Hells Angels. Just don't. Because they don't, you know, Hunter S. Thompson, read the book. he wrote a book about the Hells Angels. And Hunter S. Thompson lived with the Hells Angels for mm-hmm. a while. And everything, I have a copy of the book. Read it. It's true. And Hunter S. Thompson himself barely escaped with his life.
Yeah.
And so they showed up in Alabama, and at that point, then we were in this little teeny tiny town that I'm not going to name, but you know what town it was. And the sheriff actually came to my house, and it was just showed me how great and homey these Alabamans can be, and I really like it here now. Sheriff comes and he says, the DEA has tracked some activity regarding you. He said, I know it's not you, but I know you're the end game. So you have, this is how it works. In Alabama, if somebody comes into your home, you shoot them. And this sheriff, he told me that. He said, if they find you, let them in and shoot them. I don't know if I can say that. But I think that was before there was Stand Your Ground and all that. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure, because that was 1994. So this little town was very quiet. When I moved here, people left their doors open. There was no crime. And so to be told by a sheriff, go ahead and shoot the jerk, was very comforting. And then about 3 months later, another man in black showed up at my door. he showed me his badge. I'm from the DEA, and I just want you to know you're safe now because we captured them and they are in prison.
Oh, wow.
So you got the
last laugh in more ways than one.
I did. But it was harrowing. And from the time I was in the desert and then driving, you know, looking over your shoulder the whole time, I did do one really, really very bad thing. So they would have their big meetings on Thursday nights. Well, because I was the only, I hate to say decent person, but I had a good record. So their phone to their clubhouse was in my name. Mm-hmm. I called Arizona and had their phone disconnected 5 minutes before their big meeting. So I think that probably is why they followed me to Alabama, because they were really bent by that time. I really irritated the, I pissed off these guys, and it is by the grace of God, I think that I live to tell a tale.
Yeah, and live to tell it on this here podcast.
Which, sir, when you say at the end of every podcast, and it's true, I have listened to every one of your podcasts. I've shared it with people. I love your podcast. I love all these stories. Many of them resonate with me. But when you say, can you top that? I was like, oh, yeah. Because I was abducted and then followed by the Hells Angels. And once again, they were not the Hells Angels at the time. But since that time, the chapter has been.
But since that time, the paperwork is cleared and they became yeah. part of them.
You have to do some really outlandish things to become part of the Hells Angels. And these guys were up to it. Mm-hmm. And so, fun fact, true, out in Arizona with the giant cactus saguaros, mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with saguaros, but they're giant, and the men, if you irritated them, they would take you out in the desert, and they would bungee cord you to a saguaro cactus. Now, you can hold the bungee cords and not impale yourself for a while. But that is actually true. They would do that to people.
Wow.
Or if you don't know much about swirls, they have a very thin root system. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the swirls will just fall over on you and crush you to death.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You don't think of cacti as being that heavy, but yeah, I guess they would.
If they're full of water and it's raining and their mm-hmm. their roots are loose, the monsoons that someone else in your podcast has spoken about, the monsoons come up quick and fast and it's torrential rain, and then these saguaros, if you touch them, they fall over because they don't have a big root system.
Yeah.
So, yeah, wow. bad guys. I was, but you know, Keith, the thing was, when I was bartending, they were just so nice. I mean, well, because I was giving them drinks and free drinks because it's in the clubhouse. And so they were all getting liquored up and I was just serving drinks. So it started, you know, I had a job, you know, bartending, made X number of percentage of the house intake that night. And then I ended up running away from them as fast as I could. Mm-hmm. And gave away my Harley in the, you know, I said, no bike's worth it. So I actually handed the title over to somebody to take my bike. I don't want anybody to see it. I don't want to be affiliated.
Wow. Well, thanks so much for sharing your story, Sherry.
I hope that was good listening. And so people, just be aware. These guys, yeah, they will help an old lady cross the street, but if you cross them, they might bungee cord you to a floor cactus.
And of course, if you think you can actually top Sherry's story, shoot me an email at greateststoryeverpodcast@gmail.com. And also don't forget to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to be listening to help us rocket through the algorithms and keep more people finding the show.
Gabatron?